All right. Well, first, I want to thank you for inviting me here for 2 weeks. I've been enjoying this day very much. So today I'm going to talk about a series of work with Yingxuan Lin and Yifan Wang, and with Xi Ying and David Simon-Stoffing, and also with Qi Ming. The talk will be mainly based on the first paper, where we bootstrap the K3 CFT. But along the way, I will also mention, I will also use some results from the other two papers. This one is about the scattering amplitudes for type 2 string on K3 surface. And this one is the little string theory paper. I will relate everything together, hopefully, at the end of the talk. And the subtitle of the talk is From Scattering Amplitudes to Conformal Bootstrap. So hopefully this is not going to be an ordinary conformal bootstrap talk, because at the end of the day, we are going to use some input from the scattering amplitudes in six-dimensional supergravity. All right. And the outline of the talk is the following. First, I will introduce what do I mean by K3 CFT, some standard knowledge on what we know about the K3 CFT. In the second part, I will talk about and give a physical proof of a surprising equality between the superconformal block and the ordinary bosonic Virasoro block. And in the third part, I will talk about the standard conformal bootstrap result, some numerical bounds on the spectrum of the K3 CFT. And the fourth part, the last part, hopefully will be the most interesting part, that we will put the moduli dependence into the story. All right, so that's the outline. Good. All right, so what's the goal today? The goal is to constrain the non-BPS spectrum of two-dimensional C equals to 6. 4,4 superconformal field theory using conformal bootstrap. Okay, so one particular example would be the two-dimensional nonlinear sigma model with K3 surface being the target space. I will explain why we restrict to the C equals to 6 momentarily. And by 4,4, to be more precise, I mean the small n equals to 4 super Virasoro algebra. So in two dimensions, there are different kinds of n equals to 4 super Virasoro algebra. Today, we are going to focus on the small one. I will define the algebra later on. But that's the goal. We want to constrain the non-BPS spectrum. On the other hand, the BPS spectrum can be easily read off from, say, the elliptic genus of the K3 CFT. So why should you care about this work? I think apart from the usual motivation of understanding, constraining the spectrum in any CFT, there are some new ingredients that we put into the story that can hopefully keep your attention throughout the talk. So let me mention two, in case you really don't care about K3 CFT. So the first novelty is that we can do a moduli dependent bootstrap. So usually when people do the conformal bootstrap, usually when we talk about CFT, it may or may not come with a whole moduli space, a space of exactly marginal deformation. And usually when we do the conformal bootstrap, the bound we obtain is universal on the whole moduli space. But it would be more desirable if you're, in the case when your CFT comes with a whole moduli space, you might want to know that at every point, what's the numerical bounds you can impose on the spectrum of the CFT. So we hope that the numerical bounds can depend in some way on your moduli space. And that's what we achieve in the special case of K3CFD. The K3CFD comes with a very large moduli space. And at the end of the day, I will show a plot where we can bounce the non-BPS spectrum depending on where you are on the moduli space. It's a one-dimensional slice that we cut off on the whole K3CFD moduli space. So that's some new ingredients that we put into the conformal bootstrap story. So that's the first thing I want to bring to your attention. The second thing is a rather miraculous representation theory effect that we observe. We found that the superconformal block equals to a bosonic block in two dimension. And here I'm talking about a Virasoro block, not a global block. I will fill in the detail later on, but this kind of statement has been observed in higher dimensional CFD, where the superconformal block equals to the bosonic block. But there, it usually follows from some identities of the hypergeometric function. But in our case, the Virasoro block or the super Virasoro block do not satisfy any finite dimensional differential equation, finite order differential equation, and at least to me, the equality seems more miraculous. So these are the two interesting features that I want to point out in the story.
These are both generic implementations?
Oh, no. Special. In the case when the external operators are BPS. Yeah, I will be more explicit. Actually, is it possible to see? Oh, I think it's possible. OK. All right, so now I will start the talk. So we start with what is the K3CFD? What's the CFD that we want to bootstrap? I want to mention that actually the bounds we obtain can be applied to any two-dimensional sequence of 6, 4,4 CFD. But the main player today will be the K3CFD. And by K3CFD, I mean the two-dimensional nonlinear sigma model. I think I just destroyed this. Not sure how to put it back. Oh, that seems to work. Thanks. Okay, sorry about that. All right, so the K3CFD is just the two-dimensional nonlinear sigma model with K3 target space. And K3 surface is a real four-dimensional manifold. So the central charge is 4 times 1 plus 1/2, where the 1 corresponds to the boson, the XCFD you assign to each dimension, and the 1/2 corresponds to the fermion. So the central charge is 6. All right. And the K3CFT comes with a moduli space. The moduli space is locally the SO20,4 modded by SO20 times SO4 locally. And globally, you have to model by some the auto-automorphism group of the of SO20 of the lattice. Right. So it's a 80. The 80 comes from 4 times 20. Dimensional moduli space. It's quite a big moduli space. And just to remind everyone where this 80 dimensional moduli space come from, so the Hodge diamond of K3, such that you have 1 here, 0, 0, 1, 20, 0, 0, 1. So since the H11 is 20, I have 20 Kähler moduli. And naively, I would have 40 complex structure moduli, also from H11. But if the parameter you choose is parallel to the Kähler form, then it's a trivial complex structure deformation. So you have to subtract it by 2. And then you have the B field, which corresponds to 22, and they add up to 80. And part of the 80-dimensional moduli space of the K3 CFT is the geometric moduli of the K3 surface, which is the SO19, 3 multiplied by SO19 times SO3. All right, so it's some huge moduli space. And as advertising the motivation, we want to have a moduli-dependent bootstrap. So the first thing I need to tell you is that how are we going to parameterize the moduli space? How am I going to parameterize this 80-dimensional moduli space? So as is standard, such space can be locally can be described. So pick a point on this moduli space. It corresponds to an embedding of the 20,4 signature Naren lattice into R20,4. So the choice of the vectors that specify the embedding will be our parameterization of the 80-dimensional moduli space. I will be even more specific later on when we literally write down the moduli-dependent function. All right. Okay, so what do we want to learn on this K3 CFT? So schematically, you have a very large moduli space. It's an 80-dimensional space. If I pick a generic point on the moduli space, I just have a generic K3 as my target space. And I know very little about what the spectrum of the CFT is. Well, of course, I know the BPS spectrum, but I generally don't know nothing about the non-BPS spectrum. But there are some special loci on this 80-dimensional moduli space that we can get more information about. For example, there's a loci where the K3 is just T4 mod Z2. And there, the CFT description is exact, and you can know the non-BPS spectrum perfectly well. And there are some Gapner points where the CFT is described by some coset model. And furthermore, there are some large volume limit point or loci. And even more interestingly is that there are some loci where the CFT becomes singular. So if I pick a generic point on the moduli space, the corresponding K3 is non-singular, and my CFT is non-singular, meaning that my spectrum is discrete. But there are special loci on the moduli space. For example, actually, in the large volume limit, all the states become very light. They scale like 1 over the volume to the sum power. So the spectrum will also become continuous at the large volume limit. But there are some other points on the K3 moduli space where there's also a continuous spectrum develop. One notable example would be the AK minus 1 Cigar CFD. And this will actually be a very important ingredient in the whole story, which also help us giving a physics proof of the equality between the conformal blocks. I will define a Cigar CFT later on. And at those points, you will have a continuous spectrum. So you have some gap here. But above that is a continuous spectrum. So there are many interesting features you can see on special loci of the K3 CFT moduli space. Then the question is whether you can find those special points for the K3 CFT saturates the numerical bounds that you obtain from numerical bootstrap. So almost all these special loci will show up at the end of the talk. So hopefully I can bring the story together. OK. So that's the basic definition of the K3 CFT. Now, to do the bootstrap, of course, the first thing we need to do is to specify the algebra. The algebra is the small n equals to 4 superconformal algebra. And it consists of course, the Virasoro generators, Ln, and the JNI, where this is the SU2R current algebra. And you also have some fermions, fermionic generators, let me call it GR alpha A. And the small n equals to 4 superconformal algebra has the SU2R current algebra, but also SU2 outer orthomorphism group, which does not enhance to a current algebra. So just some global symmetry. Just an outer automorphism for the algebra, but it may or may not be the actual symmetry of your CFD. And the alpha and A are the doublet indices with respect to the 2SU2. Right. Now, what are the representation for the n equals to 4 superconformal algebra? So let me restrict to the case when C equals to 6. And actually, I'll focus on the, I'll write both. So as usual, we have the NS sector and we have the R sector. And here I'm just talking about the holomorphic cap. I will introduce the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic later on. So there is a BPS representation and there will be a non-BPS representation. In the NS sector, the BPS representation in the case when C equals to 6, by the way, so each n equals to 4 superconformal multiplet will be labeled by its L0 eigenvalue, the weight, and the SU2R spin. So in the NS sector, the BPS representations are such that H equals to L equals N L being 0 or 1/2. The spin is bounded by 1/2 is because once I pick C, the central charge to be 6, the level of the SU2R current algebra is fixed to be 1. And in a unitary superconformal field theory, you cannot have the spin to be bigger than half of the level. So that's the NS sector BPS representation. And under spectral flow, it flows to some R sector BPS representation with the following quantum numbers. And for the non-BPS representation, you have the weight bigger than the spin. And in fact, in the C equals to 6 case, in the NS sector, the non-BPS representations are always singlet under the SU2R symmetry. And under spectral flow, it flows to some R sector non-BPS representations. All right, so that's the holomorphic part of the representation theory for the small n equals to 4 algebra. Now, of course, the full superconformal field theory comes with a holomorphic part and an anti-holomorphic part. So we will call, let me just restrict to the NS sector. So there are three different kinds of multiplets that we will be considering in the whole theory. There will be the so-called half BPS a multiplet, where it is BPS on the left and on the right. So their quantum number is H equals to L equals to 1/2. Let me finish writing. So this is the holomorphic piece. This is the anti-holomorphic piece. Of course, you can have H equals to L equals to 0, but that would just be the identity operator. So let me now write it here. So you have all this kind of half BPS representations, and you have some quarter BPS representation where it is BPS on the holomorphic side, but non-BPS on the anti-holomorphic side. So it is annihilated by half of the Qs as in the half BPS case. And they have H equals to L equals to 1/2, but H bar equals to some positive integer, and with J bar equals to 0. Actually, L bar, sorry. And for the non-BPS guys, actually, can everyone see it down here? And for the non-BPS guy, there's just no constraint on the weight. But as we were saying, the non-BPS representation are singlets in the NS sector. So L equals to 0 here, and some H bar L bar equals to 0. OK, so these are all the representation theory I'm going to talk about and going to use later on. All right, so what do we know about the K3 CFD on a generic point on the moduli space? The half BPS operator we know perfectly well, because so their n equals to 4 primary has weight 1/2 and spin, and it's a doublet on their SU2R. Their level 1/2 descendant will have weight 1 and are the operators for the, that are exactly marginal for the K3 CFD. So they probe the moduli space of your K3 CFD. The quarter BPS guys can be read out from the expansion of the elliptic genus. So we also know how many of them we have in a K3 CFD. The real problem is that what's the spectrum for the non-BPS multiplet? And that's the thing we're going to constrain using conformal bootstrap. Okay. So let me just say a little bit more about the half BPS representation, because they are going to be taken to be the external operators in our conformal bootstrap program. So for the K3 CFT, the half BPS operator, if you look at the R sector, there are 20 of them. Well, actually, sorry, there's one RR ground state operator that has H equals to H bar equals to 1/4, L equals to L bar equals to 1/2. This is the spectral flow operator from the identity in the NS sector. In addition to this guy, which is a doublet with respect to the left SU2R and the right SU2R, we have 20, oops, we have 20 R sector ground state, which are denoted by phi I R R. And I runs from 1 all the way to 20. And the 20, of course, just corresponds to the H11 of the K3 CFD. And this 20 R sector ground states will take into be the external operators in the conformal bootstrap. There are singlets under the SU2R, and their weight is 1/4. Under spectral flow, it goes to the half BPS guy up there in the NS sector, whose level 1/2 descending is the exactly marginal deformation operator. All right, so this is the main player today. All right. OK, so then we just have to set up the conformal bootstrap program. So we consider the sphere, four-point function, phi IRR, phi JRR, phi KRR, phi LRR. And we consider the sphere four-point function of this R sector ground state. And we do the conformal block expansion. Schematically, it takes the form. Where the first term comes from exchanging an identity operator in the intermediate channel. And then you have to sum up all the non-BPS spectrum with some three-point function square . You might wonder why I only have to sum over the non-BPS operator, but not those quarter BPS operators. But that's because the three-point function between two half BPS operator and one quarter BPS operator in the n equals to 4 CFT can be easily shown to be 0. So this is in contrast to the Calabi-Yau threefold CFT, where you have all these interesting chiral ring coefficients. The chiral ring the analog of the chiral ring coefficients in K3 is just identically 0. So we only have the identity channel and the non-BPS operators. On the other hand, that makes it a little bit unfortunate at this stage that it seems hard to put in the moduli dependent. Suppose if there were BPS, suppose if there were three-point function between two half BPS operator and one quarter BPS operator, suppose this is non-zero. And suppose we can solve the exactly moduli dependent for this three-point function as we did for the Calabi-Yau threefold, then we can put this three-point function, then this three-point function will appear in the conformal block expansion, and the three-point function will depend on the moduli in a known way. And then we can do the moduli bootstrap in a straightforward way. But the fact that this BPS three-point function is actually zero makes it difficult at this stage to use the three-point function as an input of the moduli to do the bootstrap. So later on, I will explain what will be the actual moduli input that we put into the story. It's not a BPS three-point function. It's going to be some integrated four-point function that we derive from the scattering amplitude story. But on the other hand, we are also working on a separate project bootstrapping the Calabi-Yau threefold CFT. And there, of course, there are non-trivial BPS three-point function, just a Yukawa coupling in the Calabi-Yau threefold. And the moduli dependent enters in a more straightforward way.
So this amount of letters leaving some bundle on this space, right?
Which the phi IRR? Yes. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So the conformal block expansion looks like this, and we impose the standard crossing symmetry. Then you can derive, then you can use the crossing equation to derive some bounds. But the question is, or the difficulty is, if you want to do it efficiently, numerically, you want to have you want to expand the conformal block to sufficiently high order. But that's actually extremely difficult to do for the n equals to 4 algebra, simply because it contains too many generators. So you can work very hard to get the linear term in z, the quadratic term in z square, but at some point you get tired, and it seems almost impossible, even by computer, to go to higher powers in the conformal block expansion. So we need something better. Some better tool to compute the n equals to 4 conformal block in order to perform the conformal bootstrap program. And that's where the second part of the talk comes in. So the observation we had is the following. Consider this conformal block, where phi r is some h equals to 1 quarter singlet under SU2R BPS operator. And let the intermediate guy be some non-BPS operators with generic weight h. And as we were saying, the non-BPS operator necessarily has SU2R spin being 0. The statement is that this conformal block actually equals to some simple factor of z to the 1 half, 1 minus z to the 1 half, times a Virasoro block. With intermediate weight h plus 1, there's a shift in the intermediate weight, and external weight being 1. I will give a physics proof of this equality. But with this equality, is the n equals to 4 conformal blocks, which we need to do the conformal bootstrap, can be computed to very high power in the Z or Q expansion. This is because the Virasoro block, the bosonic Virasoro block, satisfy the famous homological recurrence relation. And we can use the recurrence relation to go to very high power of the conformal block expansion, in the Q expansion. So this is the key point that enable us to do the conformal bootstrap for n equals to 4 CFD. And now let me give a proof of why this is true. But actually, on the other hand, that's a physics proof, and I would be interested in a more representation theory approach. And just one more comment that for general n equals to 4 conformal block, if you take the external operator to be non-BPS, then there are more than one conformal blocks. But if you take the external guys to be BPS, you can easily show, similar to the argument that that three-point function is zero, you can easily show the BPS n equals to 4 conformal block is one-dimensional, therefore making the equality unambiguous. OK, so what's the proof? The proof is to use the so-called n equals to 4, c equals to 6, cigar CFD, or precisely ak minus 1 cigar CFD. So what's the these are the singular CFTs that shows up some special loci on the K3 CFD moduli space. They are defined as the orbifold of the SL2 at level k mod u1 n equals to 2 coset times SU2 at level k. The k is a supersymmetric level, so it's shifted from the bosonic level by plus 2 or minus 2, depending on whether you are talking about SL or SU, times the SU2 mod u1 n equals to 2 coset. In other words, the n equals to 2 minimal model. And you take a ZK orbifold. Before taking the ZK orbifold, the theory is a product of 2 n equals to 2 coset and only has n equals to 2 superconformal symmetry. After taking the ZK orbifold, the superconformal symmetry enhances to n equals to 4. These are some singular CFD showing up in the moduli space of K3. All right. So now, I will consider the special case when k equals to 2. The normalization is such that when k equals to 2, this n equals to 2 minimum model becomes trivial. So the A1 cigar CFT is just SL2 mod k, at level k mod U1, which by itself is an n equals to 2 CFT, and take the, case 2. And then take the Z2 orbital, which makes it become n equals to 4 CFD. So this is some very simple n equals to 4, small n equals to 4 superconformal field theory with central charge 6. OK, but what is this guy good for? First, this guy has one RR sector, half BPS superconformal primary, analogous to the phi RR we mentioned over there. But the phi RRI, there are 20 of them. They are the RR sector ground states on the generic points for the K3 CFT moduli space. But once you go to this special loci, you can only see one such RR sector half VPS primary. Let me call them VR. This operator can be explicitly written as the spectral flow operator of the SL2 mod U1 coset primary. But I will not write it out explicitly. So, so this is some RR sector half VPS operators. Then you can ask, what's the four-point function of this guy? Now this is the point where we will use a relation by Ribot and Testrenner. There, they find that the correlation function of the bosonic SL2, not the coset, SL2 WZW model has some relation to the correlation functions in the bosonic, everything is bosonic in the Riebel-Testrenner story, Liouville CFD. With some very explicit map or dictionary between the level on the one hand and the background charge on the other hand. So there are some very specific relations between the correlation function there, which are derived from the null state equation in both theories. Now we can use this to derive the four-point function of in the A1 cigar CFT in a very simple way. The A1 cigar CFT is given by, you first take the SL2 WZW model, add some free fermions, mod it out the U1, and then you are all set. So on this side, once we know the SL2 bosonic WZW model, it's straightforward just to add the fermions and subtract the U1 part to get the correlation functions. To get the four-point functions in the A1 cigar CFT. And therefore, using the Riebel-Testrenner relation, we observe that the BPS four-point function in the A1 cigar CFT actually equals to a four-point function in the bosonic Liouville CFT. Furthermore, so now we have this equality. We can perform the conformal block expansion on both sides. And actually, both theories come with a continuous family of the spectrum is continuous. So the conformal block expansion is the integral. So you have two integrals on two sides. We know the integrals are the same. Now it's natural to guess actually the integrand are also the same. The integrand of the conformal block expansion is nothing but the conformal block. So from this equality between the four-point function in n equals to 4 theory and the bosonic conformal field theory in 2 dimension, we conjecture an equality between the conformal blocks. And that's how we derive that. And actually, I think I forgot to specify that here, the central charge of the n equals to 4 theory is 6, the K3 CFT central charge. On the other hand, the bosonic Virasoro central charge is 28. So let's see how this 28 comes from. That we have to use the Riebel-Testrenner relation. So the Riebel-Testrenner, so from Riebel and Testrenner, they tell us that this Virasoro central charge equals to, well, the Virasoro here is just the bosonic Liouville equals to 1 plus 6 Q squared. Q is the background charge for the Liouville. And using their dictionary, Q is 1 over square root k plus square root k, where k is the k of the ak minus 1 cigar CFT, the k here. So when you put k equals to 2, I give you 28. So that's where the 28 comes from. So from the Riebel-Testrenner relation, we conjecture that the integrands, namely the conformal blocks between the n equals to 4 and the bosonic Virasoro are the same. And then the next thing to check this conjecture is just to literally do the conformal block expansion on both sides. And we did that analytically and also by computer to probably z to the cube power, and they all agree. So it seems quite convincing that this conjecture is true. So that's a physics proof, but I think it must imply something more significant on the representation theory side. Okay, so that's the second part of the talk. And now we are in good business to do the conformal blocks for n equals to 4 superconformal field theory at c equals to 6. Incidentally, we don't have such an analogous equality when c is bigger than 6.
You don't mean the level of this algebra in the c equal to 6 is 1?
The supersymmetric level here is 2. Sorry.
The level of the issue.
Oh, of the n equals to 4?
Yes,
issue. Oh, that is 1 here. Yes. Yeah. but SL2 level is 2. Right. All right, so we keep that picture. So now we can just use the conformal block expansion and use the crossing equation to write down the crossing equation in the usual way and do the conformal bootstrap. And now let me tell you the result. I will not write down the conformal bootstrap equation because it's the same as in any other conformal bootstrap talk. So the bound we obtain is the following. So we were looking at the non-BPS operator between two half BPS guy. There will be identity plus some non-BPS operator. And let me call the smallest dimensional non-BPS operator showing up in this OP as delta gap. And the numerical bound, so this part is the standard bootstrap. We haven't put in any moduli dependence, just as the ordinary bootstrap. And the bound we obtain for the delta gap will be true over all the moduli, over all the points on the moduli space. So numerically, delta gap equals to, I think, 2.000, probably 3 or 4 0, I forgot, something like this. So now the question is, where does this seems very convincingly to be just 2 as you increase the derivative order to infinite. So where does this 2 come from? Or is there any special points on the K3 CFT moduli space that saturates this numerical bound equals being 2? Well, that's easy. You just look at the T4 mod Z2 point. At the T4 mod Z2 point, consider the untwisted sector.
Here you consider the collection of one single Ramon-Ramon guy or all the same?
I take all Ramon-Ramon guy to be identical here.
Okay.
Yes. So you can consider in the untwisted sector of the T4 mod Z2 theory, the half BPS operator in the NS sector is just psi psi tilde. Of course, I have to be slightly more careful about the index here because the fermions comes with the 2SU2R indices. But let me be schematic here. So the half BPS operator are just psi psi tilde. And as you can see, the dimension is 1/2, 1/2, consistent with the representation theory fact I had over there. The weight of the NS sector half BPS guy has to be 1/2, 1/2. But now, in the T4 mod Z2 theory, if you take the OPE between psi psi tilde and psi psi tilde, of course, you will have psi 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 tilde, which has h equals to h bar equals to, so the delta here is the sum of the holomorphic and the anti-holomorphic weight equals to 2. So the 2 we found numerically is saturated by the T4 mod Z2 point. So that's some sensible consistency check. Okay, so I have 10 minutes. That's the standard bootstrap. Now let me talk about the more interesting moduli dependent bootstrap and how it comes in. So to talk about the moduli dependence, I have to mention the second paper over there. It's a paper where we used the super spinner helicity formalism in six-dimensional supergravity to constraints to derive some differential equation satisfied by the higher derivative terms in supergravity. And using the constraints and some type two hadronic string duality, we derive the exact result for the four derivative. So this is type two on K3, namely some 6D2,0 supergravity. Which consists of one gravity multiplet and 21 tensor multiplet. We derived the exact result for the four derivative, 4-point scattering amplitude between the tensor field, between the 21 tensor fields, not to be confused with the anti-self-dual tensor fields in the gravity multiplet. So there's an anti-self-dual tensor fields in the gravity multiplet. There are some self-dual tensor multiplets in the tensor multiplets. Here we are talking about the four derivative, 4-point scattering amplitudes between the tensor fields in the tensor multiplet. It's an exact result in the following sense. We are talking about 6D2,0 supergravity, whose moduli space is SO21,5 multiplied by SO21 times SO5. Is some 105-dimensional moduli space. And the result we obtain is an exact function on this 105-dimensional moduli space. It takes the following form. So AIJKL is the scattering amplitude, is four derivative scattering amplitude. It's a function, well, let me not write it this way. It equals to 16 pi squared. Let me see. This is the true level case. Okay, let me explain the formula. So in the second paper there, we derive a non-perturbative result in the scattering amplitudes between four tensor multiplets at a four derivative order. Here, for the purpose of conformal bootstrap, we only want to look at the tree-level result, namely the one that corresponds to the sphere four-point function. So I took a limit on the exact result we obtained in that paper to the tree-level limit. And after taking that limit, it takes this form. The integral here is over the fundamental domain on the space of the complex structure moduli of the torus. Eta is just the usual eta function. The theta here is the theta function for the 20,4 Narain lattice. It depends on this variable y, which is taken to be the positive subspace in the in the 20,4 Lorentzian space, and if you are sufficiently familiar with hadronic string, you will see that this expression is actually the four-point scattering amplitude between the gauge boson for hadronic string compactified on T5. And using the hadronic type 2 duality, we argue that this is actually also the scattering amplitudes for the type 2 on K3, type 2b on K3. And you can check the modular weight makes sense for the integral over the fundamental domain to be consistent. And how is this guy depends on the moduli of the K3 CFT? It depends on the way I mentioned in the beginning. To specify, given a point on the K3 CFT moduli space, it specifies an embedding of the 20,4 Nerin lattice into the R20,4. So that gives you a projections of any lattice vector L in the Nerin lattice into the positive part and the negative part. So the inner product between L positive part square will depends on where how the embedding, what's your choice of the embedding. Therefore, this inner product, and also that inner product will depend on your embedding. And that's where the moduli dependence is put in. So you can pick your favorite points on the K3 CFT moduli space. That tells you an embedding of the Nerin lattice of signature 20,4 into R20,4. And then you have a well-defined projection of the lattice vector, and you can evaluate this function AIJKL explicitly. And as usual in string theory, the scattering amplitudes in supergravity will equal to the integrated four-point function of the Wershey CFT. In this case, the Wershey CFT is R6 times the K3 CFT. So you can rewrite this guy as a four-point function of the Raman sector ground state that we were looking at over there. There are some factors here that will not be terribly explicit about. But then the upshot is the following. AIJKL here serves as a one-dimensional slice of the K3 moduli space. This equation, this is an integrated four-point function, and you can write it in terms of the conformal block expansion. You can write it as which takes exactly the same form as the usual equation in the conformal bootstrap. So now you can put this equality into the bootstrap equation and obtain a stronger bound on your numerical bootstrap. So you pick a value for AIJKL into the equation, and then you will obtain some numerical bound on the non-BPS spectrum. So in the last two minutes, let me draw the plot that we obtain after putting in this moduli dependence. This is the first front guy. So the plot we obtain is of the following form. On the horizontal axis is this AIJKL. So you pick your point on the K3 CFT moduli space that will give you a specific value of the AIJKL, and you put that value of A into the bootstrap equation.
Just a single among you.
That's right. So let me call it 1, 1, 1, 1. The vertical axis is the gap, is the lowest dimensional non-BPS operator showing up in the OPE between two R sector ground states. So we want to put a numerical bound on that. Previously, we obtained a numerical bound that's universal on the moduli space. Namely, over every point on the K3CFT moduli space, the gap in the spectrum has to be smaller or equal to 2 over there. So here we will get a moduli dependent bound. And the plot looks like this. And it drops, and here's the, this point is A1111 equals to 0. And it drops to 0 when A111 becomes 0, becomes negative. OK, so let me point out a few special points in this numerical plot. First, at this point, it's 2. And you can show that if you use the four-point function of this half BPS operator in the untwisted sector of T4 mod E2, you plug that into the formula over there, do the integral, you will get 0, A1111. So this point is precisely the 2 we saw over there. It's a T4 mod Z2 point. And indeed, you see this is a universal bound that we previously obtained. It's the loosest bound that is true on the whole moduli space. The asymptotic value here is 1/4. And then you ask yourself, for what special loci on the K3CFT moduli space, the A1111 blows up? Well, one possible loci is a large volume limit. But in the large volume limit, the gap in the spectrum drops to 0. So the large volume limit is presumably hidden somewhere there. But it's consistent with the plot. Let me be just to be clear that the region above the plot is ruled out. Then what does this 1/4 mean? This corresponds to the AK minus 1 cigar CFT point. They also correspond to some non-compact target space, and therefore having divergent A1111. The AK minus 1 cigar CFT is just that coset model. That coset model in the large asymptotic region becomes the SU2. Supersymmetric SU2 level KWZW model times the linear dilaton theory. The linear dilaton theory has background charge 1 over square root k. And just to be clear, that background charge is different from the Liouville CFT background charge using the Ribot test tuner, just some other background charge. But in this asymptotic region, you can directly derive delta gap equals to alpha times q minus alpha with alpha equals to q half. And this, actually there's a 2. And this is just 1 over 2k. So the gap in the spectrum for the AK minus 1 cigar CFT is 1 over 2k. And the largest it gets is when k equals to 2. And that's the 1/4 you observe here. So the A1 cigar CFT saturates the numerical bounds at the A1111 equals to infinity limit. So this is saturated by the A1 cigar. Okay? Let me say one more thing. That why it drops to 0 when A1111 is smaller than 0? Well, A1111 define as the integral of the theta function does not have any clear positivity condition. At least I couldn't see it from that point of view. But it is the four derivative scattering amplitudes between the tensor fields in 62,0 supergravity. And as we know, such scattering amplitude better be positive to avoid the superluminal propagation in the supergravity theory. So the space-time causality constraints will tell you that A1111 better be positive. And here, from a purely two-dimensional conformal field theory point of view, we see that when the A1111 goes below 0, the gap in the spectrum drops to 0, presumably indicates that there's no consistent CFT that can saturate the crossing equation when this integrated four-point function is negative. Although it is clear from the space-time point of view, the causality constraint will require this to be positive, but it's totally unclear why that has to be the case, unless if you believe string theory, that has to be the case for that integrated four-point function to be positive.
Can you use reflection positivity?
What?
Can you use reflection positivity somehow to show that this integrated four-point function is
zero? Reflection positivity for a two-point function?
Four-point
function. We didn't really try that. Okay, but
you put the points, you put those 4 points at zero infinity,
yeah,
Q and 1/Q.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Integrating.
We didn't even try that hard enough, but you mean using that pillow geometry, the positivity for that pillow. But that only implies some coefficients in the conformal block expansion, in the Q expansion, to be positive. Right? It's still unclear.
I mean, the right-hand side of that was sum over C delta squared integral of something positive, very naive. That's what I'm saying.
Well, but the integral is tricky. Because, you see, it's a four-derivative term we want to extract.
Okay.
So that integral by itself is divergent. And you have to do the usual analytic continuation.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm not sure whether that analytic continuation, it's not clear whether that analytic continuation will give you a positive. But, yeah. But on the other hand, I was also hoping that if there's a theta function argument to say that quantity is positive. But anyway, our faith in string theory seems to work on a couple of bootstrap. I think I'm running out of time, but let me mention one more thing. You can also ask what's A1111 in the case of the twisted sector NS 1/2 BPS operator. And those 4-point function has been computed more than 30 years ago, I think. So you can just borrow the results and try to fit the twisted sector 4-point function into the plot. And they are somewhere here. So also consistent with the plot. So, well, that's everything I want to say. Thanks.
Is there any questions?
Do you think including multiple amount of errors can make a difference?
We actually did that. So we also did a mixed correlation function bootstrap. And there you can have a two-dimensional plot. And you can also see that T4 mass D2 sit at some point on the plot. Yeah, there you really have to be careful about index structure between this side and side tail. Yeah, we also did that.
So that's for the relation between n equals 4 block and the rest of our plot?
Yes.
And do you think it's true only for C equals 6 or do can be extended to other center charges?
We don't know. We don't have an argument how to extend that. But on the other hand, we do have the equality between the n equals to 2 block
mm-hmm.
with arbitrary central charge
mm-hmm.
in either the chiral or the chiral anti-chiral channel mm-hmm. with the bosonic Virasoro
mm-hmm.
one. But it's unclear to us at this stage whether the n equals to 4 can be extended beyond c equals to 6. You see, part of the problem is that we don't have many c bigger than 6 small n equals to 4 CFD. We have a bunch of large n equals to 4 CFD, but not small. So one candidate that one can try to cook up would be the small n equals to 4 Liouville CFD. But those CFD have not been studied in detail. So like the DODD formula for the small n equals to 4 Liouville is not known. So
I thought that was the n equals to 4.
That's a C equals to 6, I think.
Yeah, I thought that was it.
Huh?
I somehow thought that was it. So that's what we call superlative.
Right, but there would be extension when C bigger than 6.
Is it obvious?
Oh, so right. You can start with a linear dilaton theory plus a compact boson and plus a SU2WZW model. And using that free theory, it's not literally free, but Using that theory, you can write down exactly marginal deformation to be the Lugo potential. And that was actually mentioned in the Cyber-Witten paper,
right?
The D1, D5 CFT paper, because they proposed that n equals to 4 Liouville to be the war sheet theory of the long string. Mm-hmm.
Is there any other question? If not, let's thank Shubhendra.